Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first wave, first chapter, verse 25, and we're continuing the discussion of the six characteristics of bhakti. And we're discussing about kleshagni, how devotion and service, practicing bhakti removes suffering, misery. And the biggest cause of misery is ignorance. And ignorance causes us to sin and act incorrectly. And those sins have different stages, which are all eliminated by bhakti. And now he's getting to the point. He told the minor causes of suffering, which are sin, and now he's talking about avidya, which is the basic cause of suffering. This verse is there. I guess it's his verse. I don't think it's from anywhere. Well, this is from Bhagavatam. Yat pada pankaja pala. Oh, we read this yesterday. Oh, we read this yesterday about this. We read that here or somewhere else? Vilas Bhaktiya. That was in. It was in Chaitanya Charitamrita or Bhajan Rahasya? It was in Bhajan Rahasya. That's amazing. All these things, you know, that's going together. No, this is. I said, wait a minute, isn't it? Yat pada pankaja palasha vilasta bhaktya karmashayam gratitam udgrati yanti santa tadva narikta matayo yatayo piruda. Turn it down a little bit. I said, I'd like to. Shoto ganash chamaranam bhajavasu devam. So, Rupa Goswami is describing this verse in relation to bhakti's ability to destroy avidya is illustrated. That's interesting, it was a different point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used the verse yesterday in Vajrasim for a different point. Anyway, the devotees, by actions of service to the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord, can very easily overcome the knot of ignorance carrying unlimited impressions of karma tied tightly by action. Because this is very difficult, the empty-minded non-devotees, jnanis, yogis, etc., although trying to stop the flow of sense activities, cannot do so. Therefore, you are advised, this is the Kumaras telling Prithu, you are advised to engage in devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Taking up the topic of naishtiki bhaktis, it means steadiness in bhakti, ability to destroy avidya, the author illustrates this with two verses. So in this verse he says, what does he say? He says, by hearing. Sometimes Jiva Goswami's commentary is rather complicated, all the Sanskrit. Using the process of hearing to represent all the devotional processes, Suta Goswami gives a progression destroying avidya, or the knot in the heart, in the following verses. And so these are famous verses that we must have heard so many times, because one of them is chanted every day in Bhagavatam class, Nashta Priyesho Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevya Bhagavati Tamashalake Bhaktir Bhavati Nashtaki. So this section of verses is also quoted here by Jiva Goswami, and these are the verses that describe how, by hearing and chanting and serving Krishna, ignorance is destroyed step by step as we progress from anarthanivritti to nishta to ruchi. So we can hear these verses again, which are quite well known. Srinvatam swakata Krishna punya shravana kirtanaha Vridyantakshto yabhadrani virunoti saritsutam Nashtapareshu badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavad yutama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki Tadara jastamo bhava kama loba dayashchaye Cheta etar anavidam stitam satve prasidati Evam prasana manaso Bhagavad bhakti yogataha Bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate vidyate vridya grantish chidyante sarvasamshaya chiyante chasya karamani Dristva evat manishvare. These are verses from the first canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 2, 17 through 21. Many devotees they memorize these verses for preaching, because people often say, well, how does it work? How does bhakti destroy ignorance? How do we get free from ignorance by practicing bhakti and become fixed or steady? And this verse explains, or these series of verses. Ginger tea. So these verses are very good verses for giving class on Sunday feast. And this is a translation. Basically what these verses are saying is a devotee simply sincerely tries to hear and chant about Krishna. When Krishna is situated in heart, and he purifies the heart by removing the material desires, and he brings us, whatever mode of nature we're in, he pushes us up. If we're in ignorance, he pushes us to passion, then to goodness, and then he fixes us in goodness, and then he pushes us further into pure goodness. And then we actually become and there's different symptoms that happen. We become peaceful in mind. Then pretty soon we become very enlivened, and our mind fills with actual happiness in serving Krishna. So you'll hear this as the English goes on. We're discussing, you can sit in that chair, we're discussing these series of verses from First Canto Bhagavatam that Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami are using to explain how bhakti destroys ignorance, avidya. And avidya is the cause of all the other contaminations or sufferings. We suffer because of rag or attachment. We suffer because of envy or dvesh. And we suffer because of sins, which we heard about. So the translation. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So here, we hear about Krishna. Shrinvatam swakata Krishna. Shrinvatam means hearing. And then Krishna is pleased. Oh, you're hearing about me. That makes me very happy. I can see that you'll hear a lot better if your ears are clear. When your ears are full of wax, you can't hear very well. So to hear transcendental topics about Krishna, we need a clean heart. Because when our heart is clean, and we hear topics about Krishna, then we'll actually have experience sattvic bhavs. Some people, they sit in Harikatha, and when the speaker is speaking about Krishna or Krishna's pastimes, they're just sitting there crying. The tears are pouring out of their eyes, because their hearts have become so softened and purified by bhakti that they're actually perceiving all the different exchanges between Krishna's devotees and the different bhavas and anubhavas and vibhavas. And these things are actually stimulating their heart as they hear the Harikatha, and then they're responding by different ecstatic experiences. And other devotees are sitting there just listening, and what does it mean? Or it just goes, sometimes even goes over their head. I remember one acharya was speaking, and he said, there are many, many types of devotees in the audience, and a lot of what I'm saying is probably going way over your head, and you can't even understand it. But it's also beneficial just to sit here and hear it. But many devotees, they were hearing it, and it was going right to their heart, because their hearts were no longer covered by ignorance or passion or goodness. Their hearts were clear and clean, and soft and pure. So the Harikatha was able to penetrate their hearts and create extreme feelings of and responses. I mean, some people, you look in an audience, the Harikatha is going on, some people are totally, they're just sleeping. Maybe they're tired, or maybe they're bored. But somehow that sound vibration, Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtanaha, that Punya Shravan, that pure sound, puts them to sleep. It becomes like a lullaby. Whereas someone else, that pure sound, it stimulates their heart and creates such anubhavas and such movements that they become enraptured, totally enraptured, and they start crying. Not to make a show, look at me, I'm crying. It's, they're, even they, they cover their heads with their veil or their chadar, and they try to hide, you know. Because devotees, they don't like to make any show. But you can't help it. Just like if it's hot, you can't. If you're stuck in a hot room, your body will start sweating. This is nature, because it's the body's response to heat, because that's the way the body cools down, by perspiring. So it's called involuntary response. So in the same way, very advanced devotees, when they hear Harikatha, they can't say, "Oh, tears, stop coming. don't ears, eyes, don't cry. Hair, don't stand on end. Throat, don't choke up." Of course, they try. We also read how the gopis, they curse their ecstatic symptoms if they're fanning Radharani. Manjari's maybe fanning Radharani with chamar, and she's in a very tight embrace with Krishna, and she's perspiring, and so they're fanning with chamara, and then they become themselves absorbed in the ecstasy of the moment, and then they find their arms start trembling and their hands start perspiring, and when your hands become perspiring, get wet, it's very hard to hold on to a chamara or anything. So then the chamara starts to slip, and they also feel like they're about to be devastated by the overwhelming impact of the ecstatic feelings they're feeling in their heart. They're about to collapse. And then they're telling the ecstasy, go out from me. Ecstasies, go out of my heart, go away. You're disturbing my service. This is my service to Swamini, to fan her with this chamara. Go out from here. So on this level, the Madhurya Bhaktas, the liberated souls, perfected beings, they're telling the ecstatic symptoms to go out, go away. We don't, you know, you're disturbing our service. And we're just thinking, well, when will we ever get a glimpse or some vague contact with any ecstatic symptom so we can perceive or realize that really something's happening, and really there's some internal transformation. Every day we sing Nayanam Gadadashnadaraya Varanam Gadadashnadaraya. So part of that, of course, that prayer is explaining the symptom of bhava. These ecstatic ashru, prema ashru, these tears will come at the level of bhava, and hair will stand on end, and eyes will be like rain showers. So that's one thing, it's describing that. This is what happens. And the other side of the prayer is that we should be praying. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, we'll get to that in Vajra Rahasya, but maybe this year. Lord Chaitanya is actually showing us, look, pray. He's also praying. I'm not experiencing these ecstatic symptoms. So when will that day come? Because this is part of the experience of Krishna consciousness, the experience of bhakti. Like they have these books in the West, Experiences in Consciousness. I remember when I was in college, they have these different books. So we have Experiences in Bhakti, which include all these things. ecstatic experiences. And everyone's always saying, well, when? Where? What can I find someone that's having? So in the continuing translation of these verses, so in this first verse that he cites as how ignorance is destroyed, he says it happens like this. We simply hear pure topics about Krishna, and Krishna is sitting in the heart, and he's very pleased. It says, Srinivatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Ridyantaksto Yabhajrani Virunoti Saritsatam. That Krishna himself, he cleanses the heart. So now it doesn't say what topics, it just says anyone that says Punya Shravana Kirtan, anyone who hears this Punya Shravan, this pure topics. Someone might say, well, what are those pure topics? Or there are many pure topics about Krishna. Where can I hear the best ones? So then the next verse, Sutta Goswami is explaining. He says, these are the pure topics. Nashta Purishu Bhadreshu Nityam, this verse, Bhagavatam Sevya. So he says, by regular attendance in classes on Bhagavatam, of course this is the translation, but actually it says, Nashta Purishu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavatam. He says, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavatam Ashul, okay, it doesn't really say classes, but that's the translation. It says, serving the Bhagavatam. Serving the Bhagavatam may mean speaking on it, which means you're also hearing it. It may mean studying it alone or with others or at the feet of Guru. But here it seems to indicate, because Prabhupada is I think he's trying to do many things in his translations. One thing is to give the translation, which is also accurate. It can be presented this way. But at the same time, it's very specific to the audience. And the audience for Prabhupada's books was his devotees. He said, I'm writing these books for you. And this is Prabhupada's translation of this verse for his audience, which is his devotees who are comprised of the institution on his ISKCON. So it's a very convenient place to inject the idea that go to class every day, right? Nityam Bhagavata Sevya. What it means is we should nityam, not only regular attendance and go to class every day, but morning, noon, and night, we should be serving the Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat, hearing about the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat, the devotee and the Lord, and serving them. Nityam. Nityam doesn't mean only the 8 o'clock Bhagavatam class, but it means all the time. By regular attendance in classes in the Bhagavatam and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So in the beginning, the first verse, the person is hearing about Krishna. Now it specifies what you should hear. You should hear the Bhagavatam. This is the best. This is the best hearing you can do. This is the best punya shravanam. There's no better, higher, more perfect punya shravana than Bhagavatam. As the essence of all Vedic literature, Sarvavedanta Saram Hi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Sarvavedanta Saram Hi. Of all the Vedas, this is the essence, Saram, the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it gives satisfaction and complete fulfillment. So you hear the Bhagavatam, we become purified, and what is a symptom of purification is one becomes steady, nishta, and difficulties, it says abhadrani, it says it removes abhadra, those things that are inauspicious become removed. Inauspicious means inauspicious association, inauspicious habits, or inauspicious means irreligious, or irreligious association, or irreligious habits or behavior, or concepts or thinking, they become removed by hearing about the Bhagavatam. Then it says, as soon as naishtiki bhakti is established in the heart, the effects of the modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. So the purport here says that when it says establishing goodness, Vishwanath Chakravarti says in his commentary, this is Shuddha Sattva, not material Sattva. Because it may be misleading, because it just says that, all right, we hear the Bhagavatam, all the inauspicious things are destroyed, as I mentioned. Then passion, ignorance also start to go, and their expression of passion, ignorance is lust, desire for material enjoyment, and hankering, and lamenting, they disappear, and we become established in goodness. Well, someone will say, well, I do pranayam, I'm doing pranayam and yoga, and eating sattvic ahar, or pure vegetarian food, so I'm also established in goodness. I'm a good guy, I'm eating good food, and I'm also feeling free from lust, and also feeling peaceful. So that's a fact, that will happen. But it's not. But the source of the lust is not removed, which we discussed, the actual seed. Although you can keep everything calm, but you can't. You're not removing the actual desire to act in a greedy or lusty way. So it's a temporarily you manipulate the modes of nature through pranayama or through diet or through meditation. So then you create this situation where you actually are situated in material goodness. But today you're in material goodness, and there's some upheaval or change in your environment, or you have to move somewhere, and you're moving to an apartment where there's all, you know, call girls living there or something or whatever. And then all of a sudden the sattva goodness gets a little disturbed by the rajasic environment, and then you find yourself not so peaceful because the environment stimulates the stored desire seeds that you have for these activities. So these things are always fluctuating. But this bhakti, because Krishna himself is in the heart, and he's removing the cause of the lust. He's removing the cause of the greed and the anger, which is the kama bija, which is actually the bijam, the kutam. So then it says, devotee becomes established in goodness. This is sattva. This is shuddha sattva. This is pure spiritual goodness. It means he comes to the spiritual plane. Sagunan samatityayatan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Brahman comes to the Brahman platform. Because nishta and bhakti, you can practically say, someone is on a platform of nishtita bhakti, which is explained here. He's like Brahman realized. He's only acting on a platform of the soul. Because there's no more materiality. Practically the materiality, that's what it says, is practically gone. Then the verse, Bhagavatam goes on. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord. Excuse me, this previous... what does it say here? Well, this verse, Vishnu says, also means ruchina sakti. And this verse I'm reading now describes rati and bhav. So I'll repeat that again. This verse, canto 1, first canto, chapter 2, verse 19. This verse explains, first of all, shuddha sattva, which is like a spiritual type of goodness, which doesn't change. Material goodness changes. Anything material is fluctuating, in flux. So this is a fixed spiritual platform of goodness. This verse describes that. And also describes ruchi and asakti, means having great taste and being very attached to the Lord. Now this is the verse again. As soon as naishtiki bhakti is established in the heart, the effects of the material modes of nature, passionate ignorance, which create lust, desire, and hankering, they disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. So this represents ruchi and asakti. Now the next verse in this series of Bhagavatam verses, verse 20. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in a stage of liberation from all material association. So this verse represents ruchi and asakti. And then, yeah, because these footnotes, there's two footnotes in one verse. But this is rati and bhav. So when one is rati or bhav. Rati is another name for bhav, which means one has actually experience of the Lord, realization of the Lord. You can even have darshan at this level of bhava. In the beginning level of bhava, one will have what is called spurti, or have very extended darshan of the Lord within his heart while meditating, due to his absorption and the purity of his heart. And this term that we heard described as spurti and visporti. At the upper level of bhava, as one approaches prema, then one can have sakshat darshan directly outside. Krishna will be so pleased with the purity of his purpose, intention, and mind and heart of such a bhava bhakta that he'll give him the eyes to see him and actually grant his darshan. At that point, one is considered a siddha devotee. And so with that darshan, Krishna also effects the final refinement of his bhava, which will lead him into prema. Sometimes Krishna does that. He gives a darshan to quickly pull the devotee into prema from bhava. And prema is simply condensed bhava. So this verse is rati and bhava. In other words, he's established in shuddha sattva, and he's completely inspired and enlivened by bhakti, and he gains positive scientific knowledge of God. That means realization. He actually realizes the Lord. Tattva-darshi. He becomes a tattva-darshi. Then, now this next verse is describing, Vishnu says, this is what I was saying. This next verse is 21. Thus the knot in the heart, avidya, is pierced, and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruit of actions is terminated when one sees the Lord who is Atma. In other words, he realizes the Lord in the mind. So So this is a further explanation of what's happening at bhava, which I've already mentioned. At the level of bhava, one has this darshan of the Lord in the heart. Spurti or visporti. So Vishnatka's commentary on the same verse, which Rupa Goswami cites by saying that bhakti has the ability to destroy avidya. So the Bhagavatam explains it here. Vishnath says, with two verses, the ability of naishtiki bhakti to destroy avidya or ignorance is illustrated. Oh, now, this it's interesting. This verse that Rupa is citing is the same verse we discussed yesterday from Bhajan Rahasyam about the Kumara speaking to Prithu about Vilas Bhakti or Vilas Bhaktiya. Yesterday afternoon, we were discussing this verse. And when we started class today, it's the same verse, Rupa Goswami. So somehow we are meant to understand this verse, which is from 4th canto of Bhagavatam. We can think of this as some kind of cryptic message from the Supersoul for all of us. 4th canto, chapter 22, verse 39. There's something special and important in this verse for all of us assembled here yesterday and today. Yatpada pankajapalasha vilasa bhaktya karamashayan kratitam udgratayanti santa tadvanna rikta matayo yatayo piruda shoto ganashchamaranam bhajavasudevam. So Vishnath, he comments on this verse, which was discussed a little bit yesterday. So in this verse, the word palasha means petal. It actually petal, he says it means petal, also means palasha leaf also. It refers to the Lord's toes. The word vilas means distinctive sport, because it's vilas, right? Because vi means excessive or special, and las means to move, like lasya. When you read Govinda Lilamrita, it says there's different types of rasa dances. One's called Chalikya, which is a female dance, and there's Halisaka, and one is called Halisaka, Chalikya, then there's Tandava, which is Krishna dancing, gopis circling around him. Then there's Lasya. Lasya is also a female dance, and Krishna is playing flute, and they're dancing around him. So Lasya is a type of is movement. Lasya, so vilasya, or vilas means special movement or excessive movement. So that's why he says it. Vilas, because we say also vilas means sport or it means pastime. So here he's saying vilas means distinctive sport or movement with distinction. Because this part vi means vishesh. And in Hindi, vishesh means something special, like vishesh gun. Very special qualities. So vilas means very special movement or a special distinctive lila or pastime. In other words, Vishnu says, beauty increasing at every moment. So he says vilas means beauty which increases at every moment. So bhakti has two forms, sadhana and sadhya, practice and perfection. The word in this verse, and then there's a footnote. The word sadhya, which means perfection, is mentioned here because the final destruction of the knot of ignorance in the heart actually takes place at the level of bhava bhakti and not sadhana bhakti, though sadhana leads to bhava bhakti. So even up to bhava bhakti, there can be some slight ignorance in the heart, even in the beginning of bhava bhakti. And that ignorance can occasionally express itself as attachment to objects of this world, like a deer. You know, sound familiar? So Jed Bharat, we say that he was on the level of bhava, but he was on the very beginning level of bhava. A sakti goes to bhava, so he was attached to Krishna, and he had so much ruchi, for Krishna, that he was able to leave his wives and kingdom and everything. Which everyone said, wow, it's amazing. He's 24 years old and he's an emperor of the world. He must have so many queens and opulence. He left everything. But there was still some knot in the heart. There was still some ignorance in the heart, which means there was still some material attachment. So that material, because so even though he had so much ruchi, taste for Krishna, that he lost Nandana Janana Sundaram were practically there for Maharaj Bharat, and then he left all of that, and he went to the forest, and he's living a very renounced and detached life in Sattvagun, and he's doing his bhajan. But there was still some slight ignorance there. So even though he was entering the threshold of Bhav, somehow or other, he became, his attachment for took shape of this deer, because he had some stai bhav to be attached, to be affectionately attached to some living entity. That stai bhav was still there in the form of ignorance, because any attachment to a living entity of this world is ignorance. Avidya, because our attachment should be for the supreme entity, and that's paravidya. So then he became attached to the deer, and he took another birth. There's nowhere described that he had realized his siddhadeya, and he was absorbed in astakaliya meditation. Because a Gaudiya Vaishnava, when he comes to the level of bhava, and by mercy of Guru and Mahaprabhu, then he enters into his siddhadeya. He actually realizes siddhadeya. When you're absorbed in your siddhadeya and enter lila and do seva, they're not going to become attached to some deer. And because there's so much satisfaction coming, and moreover, all the ignorance is destroyed, because one can't really realize their siddhadeya as long as ignorance is still there. That's why we chant the name while meditating, so that the ignorance will be destroyed very quickly by the power of Nam. So he's saying that this word in the verse karmashayan means ahankara filled with impressions of karma. This is tightly knotted gratitam. He's telling each word meaning of this Bhagavatam verse. Please worship Vasudev. Because the Kumaras are saying Vasudev. So the word Vas means residence, right? Like we say Harivasara. Because he's called Harivasara. So the last line of the verse, it mentions this. This is right. Aranam Bhaja Vasudevam. Bhaja Vasudevam means you. Yesterday we heard that Vasudeva means Vasudeva Krishna, which represents Krishna, who is the, you can say, Lord of Samvit, or knowledge, or chit potency, cognitive potency. And now Vishnath is saying Vasudeva means the shelter. Please worship Vasudeva. Bhaja Vasudeva. Kumaras are telling Prithu, and now Vishnath is telling, it means all of us. So Vasudeva, Deva means the gods, or the living entities, or the people. And Vasu means residence, like we say Nivas. So please worship Vasudeva. He's the shelter, he's the Vas. The Vaishnava Santa, untie the knot of Ahankara, which is filled with impressions of karma, tied tightly by the Jiva's previous actions, by now performing actions to the Lord, which have the opposite effect. By the process of bhakti, progressing from sadhana to sadhya, which is offered to Krishna's lotus petal toes, whose beauty increases at every moment. So it says here, Palasha Pankaja. It says, Palasha Pankaja Vilasa Bhaktiya. So Vishnu says this phrase, that we do Arnam Bhaja Vasudevam. We worship Krishna, Vasudeva Krishna, who is a shelter of all living entities and is our only shelter. And then we perform service, and we offer that service to his lotus toes, Pankaja. And then it says, what is it? So he's saying that this Vilasya Bhaktiya is a further description of Krishna's feet. Very interesting. Consider what was discussed yesterday. We offer our service to Krishna's lotus petal toes, whose beauty increases at every moment. Renunciates cannot do the same. Why? Their minds are without objects of thought. Rikta Matyo. This is these are words in the verse from the Bhagavatam. They are without minds. Because renunciates, they renounce everything. They say, neti neti. I'm not the body, I'm not the mind, I'm not the intellect, what am I? Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. So Brahman has no mind. There's no mind there. So what do you there's no mind, what do you meditate on? There's no mind to meditate. There's no mind to think. So they can't meditate on the beautiful lotus toes which increase at every moment. Their minds are without objects of thought. They are without minds, because they're without minds. Like persons that have no wealth, Like persons without wealth, they are without intelligence, contemptible persons. Santas, commendable persons, on the other hand, have their minds concentrated on the Lord, and that is good intelligence. They have good intelligence. The renunciates have attempted to stop the group of their senses, which flow like rivers, shrotas. These are different words in the verse. But just as it is impossible to stop the flow of a river, this attempt to stop the senses is a sign of their foolishness. On the other hand, the saintly devotees, santas, it's from the verse, engage their eyes in other senses in the sweetness of the Lord's beauty and other qualities. They are very intelligent and happy. So Vishwanath is saying that the devotees, this is how they destroy ignorance. They fix their minds on Krishna. And then Jiva cited all these verses from Bhagavatam, how Krishna eliminates the ignorance and contamination from the heart. And the devotee becomes elevated all the way to the point of bhava just by doing bhakti. So I'll stop here if there's any questions, because we have to go to Vrindavan in a few minutes. So a little short class today. If anyone needs to go to Vrindavan, they can have a ride. I'm going at 10:30. If you want a ride. Any questions? It's just like foundational points, defining bhakti and understanding how bhakti eliminates the ignorance. In Bhan Maharaj's book, I wrote something here to look at what he said, his translation. Maybe some further illumination there. I like his old English. I really like his English. It's very,
you like it?
Yeah, it kind of wraps your brain around. You have to become an on-spot editor. It's really verbose also, but somehow I kind of like it. It's changed pace. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. While an absolutist tries in vain to stop the flow of the indriyas, in case you don't know what that is, that's a jnani. Tries to stop the flow of the indriyas or the senses towards the objects of pleasure by mere negative effort of restraining them. A Vaishnav devotee, a true saint or santa, cuts asunder the knots of his accumulated karma by an ever-growing self-augmenting devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, surrenderest thyself. It sounds a little bit like the Holy Bible. To Lord Vasudev, this is the only proper course, says Sanat Kumara to King Prithu in this verse from the Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 22, verse 39. Now, the commentary of His Holiness Bhan Maharaj. The commentators, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath, point out that the jnani proves himself to be a fool in trying to conquer the lust of the flesh by a negative method of asceticism and self-restraint, which is interesting to try to define the difference between those two. Self-restraint and asceticism. I guess you could say that self-restraint means that you may stay wherever you are in society, grihastha, whatever, but you try diligently and forcefully to control your senses. An ascetic, he leaves everything and goes to the forest. So you could say that. The bhakta, however, or the devotee, proves his superior intelligence by turning himself positively to the service of and single-minded devotion to the Lord. This is far more effective in conquering the blandishments of the senses. I have to admit, I don't know the meaning of that, blandishments. Can you tell us what that means? Blandish. The word is blandishments, which I think means beating or something. This, in other words, the devotee's idea of serving the Lord and fixing his mind on the Lord is far more effective in conquering the blandishments of the senses, say the pushing of the senses, than the mere negative way of purely ascetic or renounced life. The senses turn towards their respective objects as a river flows down the course. Its course. It is sheer folly to hope to stop the current of a flowing river by negative resistance. In other words, the senses are pushing. You're saying, okay, no, stop. And then you try to do, now I'm breathing, I'm fixing my mind on this vibration, Om, and the senses just be quiet. And so they're quiet, but then as soon as you start chanting Om, then they say, hey, come on. So it's like this, because we also have direct experience of these paths. The santa or devotee takes to more effective course of a plunge into the nectar that flows out of the sweetness of the Lord's person. So he's kind of making it, he's saying, the senses are flowing and pushing like an ongoing rushing river, and they're trying to put a dam there. And we're saying, oh, all right, let go with the flow. Don't dive into the river of the sense flow. Dive into the river of nectar flowing from the sweetness of Krishna, which you can attain by surrendering to and serving him. That's very nice. Plunge into the nectar that flows out of the sweetness of the Lord's person, and thereby the devotee allows himself to be swept away in a current of flowing nectar, which takes him far away from the temptations of sensuous life that have their roots in avidya or nescience. One should therefore take refuge in Lord Vasudeva, because the word vas means refuge. So it's quite well put.
So he's
poetic and correct philosophy.
His vilas means to be swept away into bhakti.
Yeah, bhakti vilas means this is the devotee's pastime. That he jumps in the river of those lotus feet and the nectar flowing from those lotus feet, and that river is accessible to him by his surrender and his service and his remembrance of the Lord.
The senses,
when the senses are all immersed in that river of sweetness found in service of the Lord's feet, the senses become washed. Mm-hmm. When you go in a river, you become clean. So in this case, the senses become washed by serving the lotus feet, the sweet lotus feet of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Sweet, sweet, can't be beat. What a treat, them two lotus feet.